Hi, this is Leonard Peikoff here to apply Ayn Rand's philosophy of objectivism to your real-life questions. My responses cover subjects of general interest, such as human relationships, career, and morality, but not current politics. For the present, my answers are posted every other week on Mondays, and Dr. Yaron Brook answers questions on current events on the alternate Mondays. You can listen to full episodes on iTunes or listen to single questions or full episodes on my website. Several years of podcasts are now easily searchable by topic or keywords. If you have a philosophical question to ask, simply go to www.peikoff.com, and that's spelled P as in Peter, E-I-K-O-F-F, like the word off at the end, peikoff.com. And of course, feel free to follow me on Facebook and Twitter. My mother is 91 years old and has had severe dementia for the past 4 years. She doesn't recognize me, my wife, or her grandchildren. It really depresses me to see her in this state. Is it immoral for me to not visit her anymore? I'm going to ask, how close were you to her? How strong emotion did you feel for her? And how strongly do you remember fondly your memories? How deep was her grief? Now, if that was the case, I don't think it's at all obligatory, but if that was the case, you might want to still see her, even if she didn't see you, kind of in the same way that you go to a grave just to be with as close as you can the presence of what she was. There are people in my life of whom I felt that. Ayn Rand, if she were in that state, I would definitely go to see her or my daughter. But I hope I don't upset anybody. My mother was in the identical position, 91, 4 years dementia. And I stopped. I stopped going after a couple of years, again, because she knew absolutely nothing. Now, you could say I loved my mother, but we were not that close. She was not in my life, certainly what Ayn Rand was. I'm not saying anything against her. She loved me. She raised me the very best that she could, but we were sort of on different wavelengths. And after I had done what I thought was appropriate and that she wasn't benefiting, it was a relief, not a problem for me not to go. And I didn't see any reason why I should. Could the future of the human race be a concern for an individual, be it its success or extinction, even if it does not affect the individual's own life? Well, again, I speak for myself, not necessarily others or for objectivism. I personally would have a concern in my life only for the future survival of the values of my era that I know about and care about. I would want my daughter to have a happy, successful life. And the expression of my concern would be, while I was alive, I would do what I can to ensure that in the appropriate way. I would want my books to live after I die, even though, and other things too, even though I wouldn't see it, it is a value to me now that they go on, and therefore I would do what I can. But if you ask me, the world in general, 20 or say 200 years after anything I can conceivably project from my life, no, I have no concern for that. I mean, I have no clue as to what's around at that point. The way it goes now, it might be cavemen. So I can't go beyond what I can value. And even if I did have a concern, which I say I have no basis of, how would I express it? I don't know what that world is, what exists in it, what would be a benefit to it, so it would be useless practically to have a concern. So either way, I have a concern for my life in this world, a derivative but minor, lesser concern for what's going to happen after I die in the first generations, where it is still related to the values I hold now, and I can see that. And then once it's completely severed from me, from my knowledge, that's it. I have no concern. It's like Kant's new middle world to me. I don't know about it. Now, here's a funny question. Is it immoral to give you, he's talking to me, a false name and email if I want to protect my privacy when submitting questions. There's a lot of personal stuff I'd love to ask you, and I don't want my identity to get out. I would say 100% moral, fine. I have no problem with that. There's no reason in the world why I need to know your name or why it's even implicit that you're giving me your name. Only the government wants your name. I don't. So I think the best thing for you, why don't you call yourself false name at whatever, dot whatever. And that way you are telling me the truth, but I don't care if it's the truth. But if that bothers you, do it that way. And then only the NSA would be able to figure out who it is. Anyway, you know, when I get emails, I don't know about anybody else, they don't even say the city that it comes from, even the world part that it comes from. So the name wouldn't help me, but don't give it, please. It doesn't affect my willingness to discuss your point at all. Now, it makes a difference to me, as I've said several times, if you're young or old, but what you're called is worthless to me. I mean, it doesn't make any difference. Now, here's one. I am a small business owner. Very happy with life. I only work 25 hours a week and have much spare time to enjoy my many hobbies. I have no interest in expanding my business given my high income. However, I feel guilty if I'm not striving to be the next Steve Jobs. Doesn't that mean I'm being inconsistent with the philosophy of objectivism? My answer is no philosophy can prescribe the number of hours you should work. If you have 25 hours of work and the rest is still in some way challenging to you, even if it's not as challenging as the 25, you don't have to do more. Who can object to saying, you are doing excellent work, but you want longer off than other people? If you're accomplishing rational goals and getting the appropriate, you know, productive satisfaction, the only question I would have is, what do you do with those extra 15 hours? I would say you should, in some sense, in some form, to some extent, be using your mind, developing. In other words, being in some condition other than stagnation, alcoholic stupor, mindless escape, total out of focus, etc. That's not good for you. That's very harmful to the development of your life, and including ultimately to your business. And, you know, hours like that a week are certainly against objectivism. But it doesn't have to be like that. There are many things that you can do in the nature of a hobby or outside interest, etc., that keep your mind active and alert, that are not part of your general production. And if your general production keeps you functional, pays your bills, and what you expect to accomplish, you want to accomplish, who can say no? Now, there was a time in my life when I spent a lot of time on things that were not part of developing a philosophy. I joined a tennis league. Believe it or not, I could play once. Not like, you know, Bjorn Borg, but I could to some extent. I took time off to try to learn Spanish, which I never did. If you keep yourself functional as opposed to just awake, I don't see that it's immoral. Suppose you could prove, and just as it's a science fiction example, that if you worked 1 hour a week, you use such concentrated, profound brain mental activity, and you came up, you know, each week with something like your cyclotron or whatever, and someone said, you know, you should be doing that 40 hours a week. I'd say, that's ridiculous. It depends on the energy. It depends on the whole context. But productiveness and the use of your mind does not mean a 40-hour week. It doesn't mean that. It could be a 25, or it could be a 50. In some weeks, it could be zero because you're too tired to work. Here's another personal. What coursework was involved in your PhD studies in philosophy? Was there a minimum requirement for technical aspects of philosophy, grammar, languages, etc.? Did you specialize? What was your thesis on? Well, I'll give all of that a very fast answer. The coursework is pretty standard. That is to say, almost all modern philosophy, very little on the history of philosophy. So very unsatisfactory and not very valuable. So you really couldn't specialize. The minimum requirement, we didn't have you know, a set of courses. It's just a number of points. You get so many points. So if you finish those points, you can make up any combination you wanted. And then you had to pass three 12-hour written exams on logic, ethics, and the history of philosophy. Very comprehensive exam. No grammar. That's a different subject. Yes, languages. You had to learn. Well, I picked French and German. Well, French, I had both of those. No, French I had taken in school. German, they gave you a 12-week course and then plunged you to the final exam, which was so easy that anyone could have taken it. And I had some Latin from school in Canada. We started Latin in grade 8. And I tried Greek after I graduated, but my memory had gone by that time. Now, I'll tell you the title of my doctoral dissertation. The Status of the Law of Contradiction in Classic Logical Ontologism. That's what I had to call it. I was discussing the difference between Plato and Aristotle on logic and how Aristotle was this worldly and Plato wasn't. But I had to give it a name like that or they wouldn't accept it. I even had to include Greek passages in Greek, which my mother copied from the book, which I had no idea what they meant except that they were relevant in order to be scholarly. The whole thing was a farce. At the end of it, there was a 2-hour oral exam with the whole department present. They were asking me questions, and I was more or less answering. And I was in the middle of one answer when the bell rang, and the chairman of the department said, okay, that's enough. You can leave now. Right in the middle of a sentence. You know, they wanted to get out of there. They didn't care. And so that was over. So that is the great experience that I had. You've mentioned that you enjoy working out with your trainer. What is your preferred method of exercise and why? I have been said and taught a lot of horrible names and things have been said about me, but never that I enjoy working out with my trainer. A preferred method of exercise to me is like a preferred method of suicide. I hate it and I always have. And I always ask my trainer at a certain point, do you think we are finished yet? How many more minutes left? And if he leaves early, I always make a point of saying thank you. The only preferred you could say are ones where I'm lying down or where I'm not moving very much, like the shoulder lift or the calf stretch. But as soon as you get to anything more than that, I'm counting the minutes. I don't know where you got that idea. If you want to know more about Ayn Rand's philosophy, I invite you to ask me a question. I can't answer them all, but I do read them all. Just write to leonard@peekoff.com. And if you haven't already done so, start by reading Ayn Rand's two most important novels, The Fountainhead and Atlas Shrugged. And I might add that it wouldn't hurt you to read my latest book, The Dim Hypothesis.